Welcome to the radio broadcast of Mount Calvary Baptist Church. Your Bible teacher today is Pastor Jesse Wagoner.
If I were to say to you, I can show you from the Word of God how you can have less conflict in your relationship, would you be interested? I know some of you are just afraid to speak out loud because you just, you know, that doesn't feel safe. But it's interesting when you look at the human condition for whatever investigation you do, and then you take that knowledge gained through observation, you can then take it back to the Word of God and see the whys and how it works. And what I'm going to be sharing with you this morning comes predominantly, or at least I was introduced to these concepts almost 10 years ago, actually over 10 years ago, from a book called The DNA of Relationships. And I'm not plugging books or trying to sell books. We have resources available. But it actually was written by Gary Smalley. Actually, it really wasn't. They put his name on the front because he was a noted author at the time. But the research came from his three sons, Greg, Gary, and Michael, and another associate named Robert Paul. And they look at it from the other end. Okay, they're studying how to help people. In fact, they have a ministry that's still going on today where they call it Marriage Intensives. And they only see couples who are either seriously considering divorce, have filed for divorce, or are separated. So you understand, the people they're dealing with in relationships are right on the ragged edge of survivability. And it's a four-day intensive situation they go in. And their statistics are, 1 year later, more than 90% of those couples are still married to each other, which is a phenomenal record when you consider where you start from, when people are ready to throw in the towel. But one of the things they looked at as they looked at this, then they went back to, okay, what is the scriptural basis? Because these are Christian men and Christian counselors. And they landed in Genesis 3. Well, I look at it just the opposite. I'm going to start in Genesis 3 and see how that looks in human life, because I'm a preacher. That's what I do. But when those things converge, it is some powerful help. And if you know Genesis 3, you understand chapters 1 and 2, God has created everything. And now we have this situation where, because of the fall, and I'm just going to say it this way, because of the fall and into sin, we are left with some relational liabilities before us. Prior to Genesis 3, mankind, Adam and Eve, were living in paradise. Can you imagine? I mean, they were living where humankind were originally created to live. It had a perfect environment. There's no storms, there's no bad weather, every day was wonderful. You didn't have to work and slave and wonder where your next meal is coming from. You just went out and pulled it off of whatever tree you wanted that day, and there it was. Perfect health, unending life, fellowship with God, no relational difficulties. And then chapter 3 comes along, and it's not my purpose today to give you an exposition of the first half of this chapter. But you remember mankind, Eve was tempted, Adam participates. They had one thing to do. They had one rule to obey. You can eat of every tree except that one. Just stay away from that one. Well, that's exactly where Satan zeroes in on. They succumb to the temptation. They feel guilty. They hide themselves. They try to cover themselves. God shows up and then he speaks. In verse 14, God says this, and the Lord said to the serpent, "Because you have done this, you are cursed more than all cattle and more than every beast of the field. On your belly you shall go, and you shall eat dust all the days of your life. And I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel." And that's, by the way, the beginning of the gospel story. Satan will ultimately receive a fatal blow. The humankind will receive a debilitating blow, but it will be recovered because of the seed of God ultimately in the person of Jesus Christ. And then in verse 16, he begins speaking first to women, then he will speak to Eve, the woman, and to women in general, and then verse 17 and following to the man. So let's read verse 16. "To the woman he said, I will greatly multiply your sorrow and your conception. In pain you shall bring forth children. Your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you." Now, there's certain parts, I just want to pull out one part, but there's certain parts of this that we probably understand. He says, I'm going to multiply two things. Your sorrow, well, we're living in a sin-cursed world. We're living not in the paradise that God originally intended. We're living in this fallen world marked and pockmarked by sin and its devastation. Also, he says, I will multiply your conception. The best thing I could ascertain by that is because now we have death entering the human scene. And not only are they to multiply and fill the earth, but death is a factor there. So God, I think, speeds up the woman's ability to conceive, to speed up the process of reproduction, multiply your conception. In pain you should bring forth children. And we understand there's two probably aspects of that. Birthing a child is a painful experience physically, but also is the pain of that Eve would know, and to some sense we know, that we're bringing children into a less than perfect world, marked with sin and all that comes from it. But the key phrase here, it says, your desire shall be for your husband. The word desire is an interesting Hebrew word. It's pronounced teshukah. The next time it appears is in the next chapter of the Bible. It's where Cain and Abel, you remember that story, the first two sons of Adam and Eve, and Cain kills Abel, you remember that, the first murder in human history. And God says to Cain, he says, sin is lying at the door. It's the same word as desire towards your husband. It literally means is reaching out. He was saying, Cain, this temptation, this desire, this thing you're considering doing is reaching out, trying to get its clutches on you and pull you to itself. When he says here, your desire is this, it means that a woman's natural inclination is to reach out and connect. And we start with this point. Relational liabilities come here at the fall. All the things that cause conflict have their genesis here when in fall. It doesn't happen in the original creation because that was perfect. So it has to happen at the fall. And God gives us some clues here. They happen at the fall. And you see here, the thing that changes that we're going to look at, and several things obviously change, is that she will have this natural, built-in desire to connect. We would say it this way, women have a hardwired need to connect. I use the word hardwired because this is not environmental. This is not experiential. This is part of who we are as fallen creatures and how God sees us and how He relates to us and how our creation now adapts to this new reality. It simply means this, that women have this need and this longing to connect. You see it among mothers, and there's just something about this nurturing spirit of mothers have. I'll tell you someplace else you see it. Find a group of elementary age students, like if some of you are teachers, so you can experiment on this tomorrow, okay? Just, you can try this. Don't tell anyone you're doing it. Just be secret about it. But find a group of, you know, 4th, 5th, 6th grade girls and listen to them talk, okay? What are they talking about? Oh, my friend, your friend, my friend, are you my friend? I don't know if you're my friend. You're my best friend forever. Would you be my second best friend and friend, right? What do you get a bunch of guys together? They're just out there, you know, punching each other and, you know, competing against each other and, you know, trying to jockey for position and favor. It's a whole different dynamic. And I think this is indicating to us that there are some gender-specific differences that are just part of who we are. There's variations, there's differences, and I know we can't talk about every nuance, but in generality, that is the case. So her basic nature is she wants to make connection with her husband. She doesn't just want to be there, she wants to have his heart. She wants to know. I'll tell you where you see this. End of a day, husband and wife are together. He's come home from work, she's either been at home or she comes home from work. Guys, you've been there, I know this. She says, sweetheart, how was your day? And there's the classic one-word answer that we typically would give, right? Fine. Trust me, that is not the right answer. She doesn't want to hear fine and be done with it. She wants to enter into your heart and hear about your fears and your dreams and your hopes and how you relate to that. And it's not just that she's inquisitive, although she is, but she wants to reconnect on a heart level. And here's us dumb guys out there just saying, fine, give me the paper, fine, turn on the news, fine, you know, feed me. So there's this hardwired connection. Let's talk about let's switch this around to men for just a moment, because it's here in the text. Then to Adam he said, because you have heeded the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree of which I command you, saying, you shall not eat of it. Here it is. Cursed is the ground for your sake. In toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life, but thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you shall return. Wow, that's a heavy load, isn't it? Especially the death part and going back to the dust of the earth part. But if you take that as a whole, you take that as a comprehensive whole, here is his hardwired experience. Men have a hardwired need to control. And I don't mean that they're controlling or over-controlling, but that's just the basic nature. To take that which is chaotic and make it orderly. Think about Adam's experience, what he experienced. The world was perfect. Everything was in its place. Everything worked. There was no frustration. Now you flip past sin. What do you have? You have almost nothing but frustration. You want food? You got to go dig a hole and plant the seed and hope it comes up and hope it doesn't die before it reaches fruition. And you're going to have to sweat, and there's going to be all these things against you, thorns and thistles. It's going to be tough. Suddenly this world that was perfect in the paradise, they have now been banished from it, and now he is living in a chaotic environment. What he wants to do, above all things, is take that disorder and rearrange it so that it's orderly, bring it under some sense of control. I know this is an oversimplification. There's always variations to the rule, but I think that's why men typically like machinery better than usually women. You know, whether it's a car, machinery, or even something technical or artistic, they like to take that which is unorderly and make it orderly. Oh, I've got that car purring like a kitten. And most women say cats purr, cars don't purr. It's a machine. It's a thing. But we like to get it all working and everything work, like everything orderly. But also we know that is not the case. So that leaves us with some liabilities, because we understand that we have this built-in frustration that the world is not orderly. And particularly when you enter into a relationship with a creature that is not your kind, a woman who wants to connect and you want to control, there's an interface there that if not understood and not handled correctly, is going to cause conflict. By the way, conflict is almost inevitable in every relationship. And I'm almost ready to take the word almost out of that last sentence. When I talk to couples who are preparing for marriage, I wait to a strategic moment, then ask them, tell me about your last fight. And they're like, oh, we don't fight. We love each other. I'm glad you do. And if they deny that they've ever fought, I don't say it this bluntly, but I'm almost tempted to say, would you just go out and have one? Just go have one. Because you got to learn that conflict is real, and you got to learn and mature how to handle this. And if you can't handle it, maybe rethink this thing. So it's just part of life. It's part of life. So now, that relational liability formed at the fall also leaves us this way. Relational liabilities result in fear. What do you think? What do you think Eve is feeling here? She has a desire to her husband, and she wants to connect with him, and he's out there dealing with this world that's completely, utterly foreign to him. And it's all chaotic and all falling apart, and that results in fear. In fear. I think he approaches this with fear. And we all have some fears embedded in us. Now, these two fears we're going to talk about in big picture, all right? So, obviously, she wants to connect. Now she has a husband that you know, he's fallen. He's not going to make good decisions all the time. He has problems. She has problems. So, can I trust? I want to trust it. We want to make this connection, but he's not always there emotionally for me. So, women fear a loss of connection. Fear of loss of connection. And in the book I previously described, they go into great detail of talking about how this generalized fear can break down into specific core fears. In other words, what specifically you fear may not be the same as someone else fears, and their fear might be different than someone else's, but certain core fears. Now let's talk about how maybe this would look in life, okay? How this would break down in life, okay? Well, let me just add the other one so I get it on the screen. Men then have a fear of loss of control, okay? Men have a fear of loss of control. And you understand how this kind of sets the emotional situation where if you don't handle it correctly, rather than throwing water on a fire, you're dumping gasoline on it. By the way, Why is it that a couple can walk into a church, stand before a pastor, vow before everybody and God himself, and say, for better or for worse, for richer or for poorer, in sickness and health, till death do us part, and somewhere down the road they can't stand each other? It happens. It's happened. It doesn't mean it always has to result in a breakup of that marriage, but there's those where they don't understand what's going on in this fear situation. By the way, you think about this a little bit. Let's think a little bit different. This is one of the reasons why men typically have a tendency to be workaholics more than wives. Think about this. This is a set of scenario. Husband's out doing what he does. He has a business. He has a job. If you work for somebody, you go to work at a certain time. You do a certain thing. You go home at a certain time. You do that, you're going to be okay. That's very controlled. If you have a business, you have a profession, you know, I have to go to work. I have to do these certain things. If I do these certain things, I should get a good outcome. And we try to organize. We try to make it controlled. And then you come home at the end of the day. Have a couple of preschoolers running around your ankles. By the way, that's as out of control as you will ever see life. Maybe teenagers are a good run for your money. But we see this with our grandchildren coming. Lovable, adorable, cute beyond compare. But in 20 minutes, an entire house is completely wrecked. And then you come home to a wife who's wanting to connect. And maybe she's emotional. And by the way, you want something that'll scare the strongest man? It's an emotional woman, because that is not controlling. That's out of control. What do you do? So what do men do? Go back to work where it's safe, where people do what they're told, right? Know exactly what to do and what not to do. So we withdraw. So we see out of control. Now, so this sets us up this way. It sets us up this way in certain ways that we can understand. Let's see if we can think of an example or two. Let's think of a man who feels that in his wanting to control things, he feels in his deep core fear is a fear of failure. And by the way, if you want to know what your spouse's or your the person you're relating to, where their core fear is, just sort of explore their trauma in life. Listen to their childhood, what they struggled through, what was some big thing that happened, and it might give you some clues about what's there. Maybe he grew up with perfectionistic parents that he could never please them enough, so he's left with this emotional liability of, I just feel like a failure. So he comes home one day, leaving his controlled work environment, of coming home, and the wife says to him, you know what? You're traveling too much for your work. You're always distracted. You're not spending enough time with the children and me. So where does that leave you? That sounds like you pushed my fear button. She just said, I'm a failure. I'm no good as a dad. I'm no good as a husband. I can't control my work life. If you give into that fear, then you can respond. Now, it might be better for her to say that a different way. But he could try this one, see how this one will work. Husband responds, because he's responding out of fear. That hurt me. I don't want people to know I'm a failure, so I'm going to try to cut this off. I'm going to prove you wrong. Well, you know what? I have to work so hard to pay the bills so we have this house and have the car to drive, and we can go on vacations, and if you would just appreciate all the hard work I do, we'd be in good shape. You know what you've just done? You've grabbed the plunger and went, and you're off to the races of an escalated argument. And this is why people get from the altar of marriage to the divorce court, because they don't learn how to put out these situations. Now, he has a choice to make. He's fearing this control, but if he wants to realize that this woman wants to connect, not control me, not just hurt me, but she's hurting here. This is an expression of hurt. Well, sweetheart, we just need to sit down and really talk about how we can find a way to make my work work and my family life work and my dad life work. And if you're feeling something that's not working, we really need to sit down and work this out. And every woman in the room that's a wife would just say, wouldn't you love to hear that kind of response? Because it just pulls you in. It connects. Or she could have maybe started out a little bit different. Sweetheart, you're working a lot, and I really appreciate it. And I think you're doing great there, but I think we need to just talk about how we can do better, making sure the kids are okay and we're okay. Can we do that? then it doesn't sound so controlling and threatening. So anyway, relational liability is also that which causes conflict. Let's think about this for just a moment. So she has this desire for her husband. He has this desire to kind of control everything so it's not scary and out of control. He has some core fears. She has some core fears, probably tilted that way because of trauma and experience in life, but really revolving around these two things. So the relational liabilities cause conflict. A response based on fears and needs is often what we do. We respond to situations in life not out of maturity and not out of what would work, but we come to this place of just saying, I'm scared. And we respond. And typically the responses fall into two categories, either hostility or withdrawal, fight or flight. I don't like it. I'm scared here. I'm either going to lash out or I'm going to pull into my cocoon. And you can figure out in your particular dynamic who goes into the cocoon and who lashes out or under what circumstances those are reversed. But typically that's the case. By the way, either of which completely violates this whole concept. If I withdraw, you're cutting off connection. If I lash out, things are out of control. And it could also be flipped around the other way. So, first of all, understand yours and others' liabilities. If you learn nothing else this morning but two words, you will be worlds ahead of many people in your relational life. If you learn that men typically are functioning in the area of trying to control the chaos, and women are operating in the venue of connection on an emotional heart level. If you just understand that, and you understand there's a reason for it, that's basically what God has said here in Genesis chapter 3 about how these two gender relations work, in particularly in close harmony of marriage. You have a husband who wants to control the chaos, all right? He's going out to dinner with some important business associates, okay? All right, but he has deep down his core fear is a fear of being humiliated. So he wants to make sure everything looks good, but he's concerned about his image, how he looks in front of these people. All right, and you got a wife who's now going to go along as part of this business social event. Her fear is a fear of I feel defective. I feel like there's something wrong with me. There's something deep down that I don't measure up. Okay, so we're getting ready to go, and the wife, because she feels defective and this is a fear, she's going to make sure everything is just perfect. It's the right outfit, everything's all fixed, the house is all right. What am I going to say? And she's running a little bit late. He has the fear of humiliation. I don't want to get there late. So to control his calendar, he says to her, please don't make us late again. Some of you just flinched when I said that, right? What he's trying to do is not really to beat on his wife verbally. What he's wanting to say is, I don't want to be humiliated. I fear that. And then she has a choice of how she's going to respond. You know? And it could be a good response. It could be a response of I'm sorry. I need to do better. Or, you know, if you weren't just always rushing me, and all, you know, it could be push the button. And by the way, I don't know why this happens. I don't know if anyone can explain it. But the thing you fear and the thing your other fears somehow are always things that you kind of subconsciously, that's the button you push. You see, when he says, don't make us late again, she pushed the button of her defective fear. If she responds, well, you know, you're always pushing me and you're always whatever, and, you know, why are you dragging me to this event? She pushed the humiliation button. And off you. Every escalated argument in relationships, almost without exception, has the same dynamic. So you have to understand your reliabilities, others' reliabilities, and then stop your reaction that would be wrong with God's help. To learn, okay, I don't care what comes my way. I don't want to react in fear. I don't want to react in fear. I want to come to this place where we understand others' liabilities and then stop the reaction with God's help, okay? That would take place. So, how do we handle this? You have to learn to become a person that is aware of your own responses. Get to know Genesis chapter 3. If you're a guy, yeah, I want everything orderly and controlled, and I don't want anything messing up what I've arranged. I don't want to be blindsided. I don't want things out of control. I want everything to fit in their little slots. And some of you ladies are saying, well, you know, if you looked in my husband's closet, you would not say he wants everything under control or garage or whatever it is. But I guarantee you there's some venue in life where he is very controlled. It might be that hobby. You look at the fishing lures in his tackle box, and it's just all there, right? Or maybe it's his woodworking shop, or maybe it's his hobby or whatever. But that's a natural tendency. She is trying her best because she doesn't want to feel this fear she's feeling. And maybe that husband could go and make this choice and go and say, you know what? I know we're running a little bit late, but you know what? I know you're trying to get ready, but you are beautiful. And if you need a little more time, just take it. There's just a way. There's a verse I want you to write down this reference to. Proverbs 15:1. If you put this into play in your relationships, it'll make a whole lot of things a whole lot better. And I know there's other things that could factor into the damaging relationships, but I'm talking about this conflict directly between the two, the interface between the two. And it says in Proverbs 15:1, a soft answer turns away wrath. If someone comes at you with hostility or with withdrawal, and maybe you don't understand exactly what that person's feeling, but say, there's something about fear there, and they may be handling it wrong. They may be handling it sinfully wrong. But you return a soft answer, not a hard one. A hard one is just going to stir it up. A soft answer will deflate it and deflect it. So find the softest answer you can have and take personal responsibility for that. We've already talked about this, and make sure you don't miss this. You can't change other people. You can only change you. Well, if he would not, that's the most unproductive thing you could do to help a relationship. You work on you, and with God's help, do that. And then respond with loving servanthood as God commands us to do. So we talked about in 1 Peter. Remember, we had 1 Peter 3:7 when we started this series. Husbands, dwell with them with understanding. It is your job. It is your job to love that lady like Christ loved the church. And if you're a wife, it is your job to respect that person and submit to him as Christ submitted even to death on the cross. And I know that seems just sort of out of place in the way we typically do life together, but it's what God responds. So I want you to just think about those things. To think about, okay, yes, this is going on. It has its genesis in this desire to connect or desire to control. And if you as a husband can do something to develop and bring the connection in, and if you as a wife can do something that would seem to bring things more into control rather than creating more chaos, it's going to help immensely. It's going to help immensely. One more verse you might want to jot down. 1 John 4:18. 1 John 4:18. This fear that we have that is sort of hardwired into us from this reality here in Genesis 3. This fear has an antidote. And 1 John 4:18 says this, perfect love casts out fear. When you're enveloped in love, the love of God predominantly, there's no room there. It fills all the space, so there's no room left over for fear. And friends, our God has loved us beyond measure. He's promised he will never leave us or forsake us. He loved us enough to send his own son to die a horrible death on the cross. He's promised someday to come and to take us to live in the Father's house with him forever. He's given us promises. He's given us his word. He's given us his spirit. He's given us all these things to express his love. If you're a believer in the Lord Jesus, overcome your fears by every once in a while. Just get into the word and immerse yourself in the love of God.
You've been listening to the radio broadcast of Mount Calvary Baptist Church in Charleston. Mount Calvary Baptist Church is located at 1509 Bigley Avenue in Charleston, West Virginia. Worship services are at 9 a.m., 11, and 6 p.m. For more information, contact calvarywv.com.